Blog Talk Radio.
I'm going to run a question that brought up Moy Bridge. Do horses run on all four hoofs? And here is a rare interview with a horse expert from the University of California, Denver. It should be starting.
Hello, everyone. This is Peter Paul. Today, in Animals and the Idea of Horses, my guest is Professor Jock Anderson of UC Berkeley. He answers the question, do horses run on all four hoofs? By way of explanation, Professor Anderson refers to the Elgin marbles. These slabs of stone were taken in the 18th century from Greece by Lord Elgin. They are now in the British Museum. Greek Minister of Culture Melina Mercuri has demanded them back, but so far without success. But here, Professor Anderson successfully tries to answer the question, do horses run on all four hoofs? Or does equine art reflect reality? A lot of sculpture, we see the horses with the paws uplifted. Is there any aesthetic significance to this?
Yes, there is, and I would say it was purely aesthetic. The sculptors of the Elgin marbles, for example, they are showing an exciting gallop past of the young knights of the Athenian cavalry. They want to unfreeze the marble to show the horses moving rapidly, and they have no real notion of how a horse moves its feet at the gallop. So they adopt a conventional way, and quite a successful way, of showing it. They know that the horse should be moving rapidly. They know that its legs do come off the ground. They've no notion of what order. So they bring the front legs up off the ground, and they have the horse rearing and tossing its head. And on the whole, I think they are more effective than some of our modern sculptors, who have got instantaneous photography to help them. For example, one goes and looks at the trophies at the Grand National Show in the Cow Palace. One sees the trophy for buck jumping, where the sculptor who makes a figure of a cowboy on a buck jumping horse has taken a photograph and worked from that, placing everything exactly literally. And this is on the whole, less successful than if you choose not even a characteristic attitude, it is conventional, and try to imply motion through putting the horse, its body, its legs, in an exciting, dramatic attitude, even if it's not one that any horse could achieve in actual nature.
So that's one time reality, art does not reflect reality.
I should have said so, but you couldn't know before Muybridge and his experiments down at Stanford. Nobody could know, because nobody could see the horse moves too quickly. You cannot actually tell where its legs are with the bare eye. We're so used to the thousandth of a second camera exposure that now we do recognize these things, but certainly one couldn't before the camera.
Going back just real quickly, how about Leonardo da Vinci or any of the sculptors of that period, Bellini or Cellini? Do they represent the animals, you think, more accurately, truly?
More dramatically, but less truly. You mean the Battle of Anghiari, for example. Now you're coming out of my special knowledge, but I think that when they are dealing with very violent motion, I don't mean the statues in which Gattamelata, for example, where one sees Sir John Hawkwood, a military commander, on a pacing horse with one leg lifted. It's the violent motion. Once again, not even Michelangelo could see what was actually happening. He is presenting his horses as his men in dramatic, one might almost say contorted attitudes, which are not in fact true to nature, but because they are exaggerated and forced, convey the notion that he wishes to put across better than the frozen photography of the Cow Palace trophies. I don't say this to abuse either the Cow Palace or the cowboys who compete there. We go every year and thoroughly enjoy it and admire them very much. But I do think that in this instance the camera has defeated art, which is not really what we go to look at anyway.
This has been a most enjoyable and expansive interview, Professor Anderson. We've covered everything from Farrier, Horse Doctor, to Marquis of Newcastle. I want to thank you for being on the program.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation.
This is Peter Paul for People, Places, Animals, and the Idea of Horses. Thank you for listening.
Well, that was from our Western Public Radio, KALW.
Hello, my friends. This is Peter Paul. Today, in Animals and Ideas, my guest is Dr. William Dudley, one of the few black veterinarians in the United States. He's a graduate of Tuskegee Institute, the only school graduating black veterinarians in large numbers. He owns his own...
That ran back-to-back, and we didn't want that. We're having some problems with all that. We have about close to 1,000 videos and audios, and about 1,500 audios, interviews that we've done over the years. So we're cataloging all of that, and several international institutions have expressed an interest in some of our rare stuff that you're not going to hear anyplace else. Among birthdays today is the composer of Les Marseillaises, Gilles Deslay, born in 1760. Famous lawyer, Blair House is named after him. Montgomery Blair, his name came up in the Dred Scott versus Sanford case, where Dred Scott was a black slave before the Civil War, and he fled into a free state, and he was pursued by the slave catchers, and he filed suit in federal court. It went up to the U.S. Supreme Court. It's a 35-page document. I went through it, and a lot of people don't know that in Roger Taney's decision, he wrote the majority decision. Roger Taney was the first Roman Catholic to be Chief Justice of the United States. He was from Maryland, and he later regretted this decision. Anyway, George Scott lost, but also in that decision, they mentioned the Supreme Court, SCOTUS, also ruled that Native American Indians, or they quoted that Native American Indians were not to be considered citizens. Also, it wasn't until the 1920s that I think the Coolidge or Harding administration were Native American Indians were given citizenship. It's quite interesting. Another man from that period, John Wilkes Booth, was born in 1818. Another guy known as Pinchback, I think he was the first black governor of Louisiana. Do you like tea? Sir Thomas Lipton was born on this day, and he's the guy that started Lipton Tea, an Englishman. And, of course, that was very big with the British, the tea trade. One of the German statesmen, Gustav Stresemann, he was in the Weimar Republic before Hitler. And, of course, Fred Astaire, it's his birthday. Now, the real name of the Fred Astaire and his sister was older, Adele, was Austerlitz. And, of course, this case has Astaire and Edward Everett Horton have a connection to the Steve Neri, Terrence Hallinan case. Adele Astaire decided to quit the Brother-Sister Act, and she married an Englishman, Lord Cavendish. His father was assassinated by Patrick Hallinan, who was the grandfather of Terrence Hallinan, the former corrupt, unlamented, former district attorney of San Francisco, who conducted a kangaroo court trial back in 1999 of U.S. Navy sailor Stephen Neri. And this is still going on. It's like Banquo's ghost. It won't go away. Ariel Durant, one of the authors of a great tome. Now, Gone with the Wind has its significance today. David Selznick, who produced it, and Max Steiner, Viennese, part of that whole crowd, Jerome Kern, Dmitry Tiomkin, all these Viennese of Jewish background or heritage, I don't know if they practice, but they came to Hollywood and wrote great film scores for the movies. And his name was Maximilian Steiner. He wrote the music for the film Gone with the Wind. And I think we'll play a little touch of it with Thomas Mitchell, who played Tara's father. Let's see if we can put, here we go. And he talks about the land. Here we go.
There's none in the county can touch you and none of the state.
Pa! How kind of chap you are!
Well, Katie Scarlett O'Hara. So, you've been spying on me. And like your sister Sue Ellen, you've been telling your mother on me that I was jumping again.
Oh, Pa, you know I'm no tattletale like Sue Ellen. But it does seem to me that after you broke your knee last year jumping that same fence...
I'll not have my own daughter telling me what I shall jump and not jump. It's my own neck, so it is.
All right, Pa, you jump what you please. Pa, they're all over Twelve Oaks.
The Wilkses? Oh, and the stew you'd expect with the barbecue tomorrow and talking nothing but war.
Come out of the war. Was there anyone else there?
Oh, their cousin Melanie Hamilton from Atlanta and her brother Charles.
Melanie Hamilton. The pale-faced, mealy-mouthed ninny, and I hate her.
Ashley Wilkes doesn't think so.
Ashley Wilkes couldn't like anyone like her.
What's your interest in Ashley and Miss Melanie?
It's nothing. Let's go into the house, Paul.
Has he been trifling with you? Has he asked you to marry him?
No.
No, nor will he. I had it in strictest confidence from John Wilkes this afternoon. Ashley's going to marry Miss Melanie. It'll be announced tomorrow night at the ball.
I don't believe
it. Here, what are you off? Scarlett! What are you about? Have you been making a spectacle of yourself running about after a man who's not in love with you? When you might have any of the bucks in the county?
I haven't been running after him. It's a surprise, that's all.
Now, don't be jerking your chin at me. If Ashley wanted to marry you, could be with misgivings, I'd say yes. I want my girl to be happy. Can you not be happy with him?
I would.
But what difference does it make who you marry, so long as he's a southerner and thinks like you? And when I'm gone, I leave Tara to you.
I don't want Tara. Plantations don't mean anything when...
Do you mean to tell me, Katie Scarlett O'Hara, that Tara, that land doesn't mean anything to you? Why, land is the only thing in the world worth working for, worth fighting for, worth dying for. Because it's the only thing that lasts.
Oh, Paul, you talk like an Irishman.
It's proud I am that I'm Irish. And don't you be forgetting, Missy, that you're half Irish, too. And to anyone with a drop of Irish blood in them, why, the land they live on is like their mother.
Well, that theme, the music in the background, was written by Max Steiner, and it's a great soundtrack. Another aspect of the American Civil War that's relevant today, besides John Wilkes Booth's Gone with the Wind, is Henry Morton Stanley. Stanley, he had his real name was Rollins. That was his mother's name. He was an illegitimate child born in England. He fled over here and landed in New Orleans, or New Orleans as they say, and adopted the name Stanley. Now, what's interesting about Henry Morton Stanley, or Henry M. Stanley, most people who know the history of Africa, his name is associated with Dr. Livingstone, that famous scene where Henry Stanley goes looking for Dr. Livingstone, and they meet, and he says, "Dr. Livingstone, I presume." Well, a lot of historians have forgotten, or a lot of people don't know, that Henry Morton Stanley, Rollins, served on both sides in the American Civil War. He was also captured, and he ended up in Chicago at Camp Douglas, which was the Union's camp for captured Confederates, and where a lot of atrocities done there, as there were committed at Andersonville, not in Chicago, but in the South, where the Union prisoners were kept in horrible conditions, and the commandant was later tried and executed as one of the earliest war criminals. What else we have today? We have Ella Garrison, who was the first woman governor of Connecticut. And then we have the son of the great Shostakovich. His son later became over here to America. Shostakovich was a great composer. He wrote the monumental symphony number 7, the Leningrad Symphony. He was living in Leningrad, or surviving, like all of the inhabitants, when the Germans were bombing the hell out of it and trying to capture it. But they didn't succeed. But a lot of things went on. Cannibalism, people starved. It was a battle that Stalin finally won, and the Germans lost. A senator who thought he should be run for president, or he tried, Rick Santorum from Pennsylvania. It's his birthday. Among the deaths today, and this goes along with the French Revolution, Elizabeth, the princess, one of the princesses of the Bourbon House, she was guillotined in 1794. And I think it's appropriate to play the original version of Le Marseillais. Pierre Montu, who was a Frenchman, emigrated to America and became a citizen. He was also a conductor of the San Francisco Symphony and teacher of people like André Previn. And here he is conducting the original version from our archives of Le Marseillais.
Yes, because I want ready to play the official version, not any arrangement.
Conducted by the late Pierre Montu, one of the greatest conductors who have lived in the last century. Among the other deaths today, George Vancouver, the guy who Vancouver, British Columbia, and Vancouver, Washington. There is a Vancouver, Washington on our side of the border. He died on this day. He named Mount Rainier. Thomas Stonewall Jackson, He was called Stonewall because he used to sit on his horse and they would shoot at him, but he was accidentally killed by his own men on this date. And, of course, the death of Henry Morton Stanley, John Rowlands was his real name. And then on this day, one of the worst sexual predators in American history, John Gacy, was executed at Stateville Prison in 1994. There were no tears shed for him, and there's still victims. I did an interview with the kid who got away, and we've played it, and we'll probably play it again, and it'll be on our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmicusVeritas. Among the events today, I'll go through it quickly because I screwed up on the time frame. In 1291, the Scottish nobles, Scotland was always independent, they finally, after Edward Longshanks, harassed them. The Scottish nobles accepted Edward the First as their lord and master and king. And there was a lot of battles about that with Robert Bruce and the history of Mary, Queen of Scots. The guy who's supposed to have discovered America, Vespucci, but in 1497 he made his first trip over here and discovered Newfoundland. In 1503, Columbus was still at it, and he discovered the Cayman Islands. And another explorer, Jacques Cartier discovered Newfoundland and, of course, Quebec and French Canada. And in 1652, a free black, John Johnson, was given 550 acres in Northampton, Virginia. And talking about land, in 1655, Jamaica was captured by the English, and it's been British ever since. Ben Franklin tested his lightning rod on this day. Washington became Supreme Commander. One of the longest impeachment trials of any public official occurred and ended in 1787, and that was of Lord Warren Hastings, who was Governor General of England. I remember if he was a lawyer or not, but he was accused of committing all kinds of violations, and he was tried by the British Parliament and impeached. I think it was about 10 years, one of the longest in history. And in 1797, the United States Navy launched its first American-born ship called the United States. In 1872, we had the first woman run for president. Eat that, Hillary. Virginia Woodhull was the first woman to run for president. Of course, she didn't win. And in 1921, J. Edgar Hoover became the head of the new FBI, and he stayed there till his death. This is an unfortunate date. In 1933, the Nazis started to burn books, and it wasn't shortly thereafter they started to burn human beings. Also on this date, in 1940, Hitler's forces invaded Holland, Belgium, and Luxembourg. Churchill became prime minister, and, of course, he bellowed against Hitler and used to say, "In this island, we shall never surrender," and he didn't. Rudolf Hess was the number two man in the Nazi hierarchy, made this mysterious flight and landed in Scotland, supposedly to negotiate with Churchill. The story is that the British would administer their part of the world and Hitler would have free reign on the continent. That didn't happen. 1956, the Algerian War really revved up, and the French government sent 50,000 recruits, reservists and recruits to Algeria, and it's a war that de Gaulle, the French lost, and de Gaulle eventually ended as he did with the Indochinese War. JFK won the West Virginia primary, and he defeated Hubert Humphrey. Hubert Humphrey's wife, Muriel, was passing out recipes for her bean soup, but it didn't get her enough votes. South Africa had its first president, Nelson Mandela. And among the interesting commemoratives today, this is Confederate Memorial Day. In fact, it's interesting because Jeff Davis was captured by the Union forces and they wanted to hang him, but they didn't. And it's Native American Day. Now, a lot of people are focusing on that horrible situation in Cleveland where this monster, this sexual predator, had abused these women for those many years. But we had a case here in San Francisco, one of a couple of cases, Kevin Collins' case is another one. But anyway, I witnessed part of this in 1982. There was a van parked in Mission Bay in the street there, and it was something odd about it, and I had bad vibes, as would the other people. We would go down there for lunch, and I'd park my van next to this one, where we didn't know until later when the police finally arrested the guy. Two males, one was Alec Cabarga, who was a victim himself, and a guy named Louis Rinaldo, or Treefog Johnson, had abducted a two-year-old girl named Tara Burke and a young Asian boy, and they sexually abused them for several months. And finally, the police busted them, and Cabarga got 208 years of prison sentence, which was later overturned because he had been abused. His mother turned him over. She didn't want to parent anymore. He was a seven-year-old child. He was turned over to Treefog Johnson, who sexually abused him. Cabarga, I think, recently got out of jail. It's a real tragedy. What had happened was the little boy, Asian boy, had escaped the van and went to the police, and they busted Treefog Johnson and Cabarga. And Treefog Johnson, I think, has gotten multiple sentences and no possibility of parole. But I'll put up what we have on this case because people aren't paying attention to it. It didn't have the duration of the Cleveland case, but it's worse in other respects because a two-year-old child was sexually molested over a period of time. She was abducted in a parking lot in another county. And this Asian boy and Cabarga was forced to have sex with the child, both children, and Treefog Johnson was involved in horrible, horrible abuse. Now, what was interesting about this case, here in California, there's a multi-million dollar victims fund, and Cabarga, since he was sexually abused himself, applied for money for medical psychological treatment, and the girl, Tara Burke, who is now in her 30s, she also applied to the victims fund, I think that's what it's called, and they cut her off but didn't cut off Cabarga, and there's an outrage about that. But these things go on, and with the Kevin Collins case, there are people who don't think he died, and there's some people who are what we call aware of some of the things that go on in this underground activity, which are young children of both genders have been kidnapped for sexual predators both here and abroad. We'll get into that another day. And it is believed that Natty Holloway down in Aruba, this is what happened to her. This is the allegation. As a matter of fact, Senator Blanche Lincoln held a hearing. She was a senator from Arkansas, about abducted children. A lot of the supposedly these young girls, blondes and that, are abducted for sexual predators and sheikhs and all that in the Middle East. But that's what goes on. Now, the other thing that's important today is that there's a growing disgust with these bicyclists. They don't pay for anything. And now I've had a discussion today. People in Chicago are talking about licensing bicycles. They have a very similar problem, although Chicago is flat, unlike San Francisco. So we'll be back Monday, and we hope to get all our other things worked out. And there'll be more interviews. And we'll end with our usual politics and poker. And let's see where we're at. Here we go.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
King two. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
face, Betts.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
Well, we don't want to pay through the nose, but or pay at all. This is Peter Paul Brizola. We'll be back Monday, and upcoming will be a whole week of Salute to Canada. We're going to feature Canadians who emigrated, came to America to contribute, not corrupt. We'll also talk about Canadians, or a couple who have come down here and corrupted. One's a judge. Another was in the oil business. And ironically, they're both from the same province, Alberta. And there'll be other things, more interviews. So go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. I think we have it up there on John Gacy and the kid who got away. We'll also have this feature on the Trefog Johnson case, in which I witnessed part of it. As I said, I parked there next to the van. But unfortunately, like a lot of people, I didn't get involved, but even though my instincts said something was wrong. So this is Peter Paul Brizola. Good night and have a safe weekend.